With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Welcome to the Pro Basketball Talk podcast. I'm Dan Feldman. I'm here with Noah Levick of NBC Sports Philadelphia, and I want to just jump right in and throw my boss, Kurt Heelan, under the bus. Noah, thanks for coming on, but do me a favor. Set Kurt straight. Tell me I'm right on this debate we were having. We were talking about Joel Embiid's tweets yesterday. He interpreted them as supporting Ben Simmons. I interpreted them as throwing Ben Simmons under the bus yet again. I'm going to read these tweets, and I want you to tell me that I'm right. Joel Embiid tweeted, sources, quote, trust me, bro, unquote. This is replying to an NBA Central tweet about a rift between him and Ben Simmons. Stop using my name to push people's agendas. I love and hate drama. I love playing with Ben. Stats don't lie. He's an amazing player, and we all didn't get the job done. It's on me personally. I hope everyone is back because we know we're good enough to win. From my own experience, y'all have no idea how much the media makes up stuff for followers, and shame on you for believing them. I haven't forgotten, but 2 years ago I got booed. People in Philly wanted me to be traded. I even shushed them. Only the real ones didn't, but I just put in the work that offseason to get better because I knew I wasn't playing up to my potential. Philly fans, y'all also got to be better. For clarity, I love the criticism. I love when I'm told I can't do something. It makes me work harder to prove everyone wrong, but not everyone is built like that. Noah, is he throwing Ben Simmons under the bus like I think?
Yeah, I don't want to cop out here, but my personal interpretation was probably somewhere in the middle there. I'm throwing under the bus to me might be a little bit strong, but I think absolutely that phrase of not everyone is built like that, it's hard to read that and not think that he's implying perhaps Ben Simmons isn't the sort of personality who holds up well when booed and takes that the way Joel Embiid did as a sign of, okay, I need to reflect and figure out where I can get better as a player. So I think I'm certainly on the same page with you on that front, but I think there was a lot to break down there from Joel Embiid. And I do think he's being sincere when he says that he loves playing with Ben Simmons, that they've had a lot of good times playing together, and that in many ways their duo has been quite successful. Is he overselling it with this idea of we're totally prepared to run it back? I think yes. I think we've seen a lot of indications that the Sixers have been seriously, you know, exploring the possibility of trading Ben Simmons, that Ben Simmons is not thrilled about the idea of remaining a Sixer, et cetera. So, for me, Joel Embiid was hitting on a lot of points there. And I think, yeah, it's probably fair to say one of them is that Ben Simmons is not the sort of personality who perhaps tends to thrive when criticized harshly the way he has been as a Sixer.
Okay, I agree with that. I do think there was a genuine nod to appreciating his time with Ben Simmons. But I also think a lot of that was about past tense, right? Like, yeah, this was good. Maybe at times people drummed up too much negativity between them. But that's past tense. Like, to throw in there, some people work harder when facing criticism, but not everybody's built like that, especially in a city like Philadelphia. Where fans are going to be hard on players. That's how the fan culture is there. And, you know, saying some people, no names, but some people aren't built for that. To end that, end his little tweet storm with that, I don't know. Do you think there's any chance that Joel Embiid either wasn't talking about, or just any chance he wasn't talking about Ben Simmons with that ending And it's just an unfortunate misinterpretation by people like me that this was not an intentional shot at Ben Simmons. It wasn't even an unintentional shot at Ben Simmons. It wasn't about Ben Simmons at all, and we're just misinterpreting.
I guess it's possible if you interpret this tweet storm as him just being pretty emotional and firing off quite a few tweets in quick succession and not thinking a ton about how people are going to perceive things. I think he probably got a lot of immediate harsh feedback from folks on Twitter when he made the comment about Sixers fans need to be better. I think some folks probably didn't take that well, and then maybe this was the instinctive response to it. So if you want to consider that a possibility, I think there's a world in which it's somewhat feasible. But as I said, I'm inclined to believe that at least somewhere in his mind, whether the front of it or the back of it, Ben Simmons was there with the comment about not everyone being built for criticism. And Joel Embiid, just, you know, having covered him for a few years, is a thoughtful, calculated guy. Not to say that he doesn't have little spurts of emotion like all of us, but I think he's keenly aware of the many people who are going to be reading what he puts out on social media and how people, you know, perhaps might interpret those things. So, yeah, not impossible that Ben Simmons, you know, was not the target of that particular phrase, but seems pretty likely from where I'm sitting.
Yeah, I agree with that, too. I think Joel Troll Embiid knows what he's doing on social media. I do want to, of course, get into Ben Simmons' trade discussions, but I want to talk a little bit about how we got here, because there's a reason that we both and so many other people are fairly certain he's talking about Ben Simmons when he says not everybody is built to grow from criticism and work harder from that. I'm a pretty big Ben Simmons fan, relatively. I think he's a very good player, and people get too hung up on his flaws, but his flaws are very real, and he hasn't progressed as much as you'd hope early in his career for a young player with plenty to improve on. He's not at that different of a level from where he came into the league. That's disappointing. Is there anything the 76ers could have done differently to avoid the situation and let it get to this point?
Yeah, I think there's blame that could be fairly assigned on both sides. I mean, if you just think about the Sixers roster and how much turnover there's been in recent seasons, I think that's likely not conducive to the growth of a young player. The decision to add Al Horford at a very high price and also bring in Josh Richardson, that was pretty disastrous. And in terms of the Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons pairing, it's actually been excellent when those two are on the floor outside of that one rather horrible 2019-20 season. So I just think the amount of roster turnover is probably not ideal. I think the Sixers have had rather mixed messaging when it comes to whether it is indeed important for Ben Simmons to shoot. You had Brett Brown, who was mostly kind of soft on that issue, but then shifted and publicly said, I want Simmons shooting at least 1 3 a game. And that never came to fruition. And, you know, perhaps another coach would have approached the situation differently and gotten different or better results on that front. But I think a lot of it ultimately has to be placed on Ben Simmons, that, you know, the question of whether he improves as a shooter and is willing to shoot, that falls most on the player. And he has not, as you said, made a lot of progress on that front. I do think he deserves credit for fulfilling a lot of the defensive potential he obviously had when he entered the league. He's a defensive player of the year runner-up. He's tremendously versatile. And it is true that he's valuable in a lot of other ways besides scoring. But the, you know, free throw struggles this postseason, that's on him, just not mentally being capable of handling that moment. And I think, yeah, the bottom line is both sides have some blame, but it, probably the largest, if you want to be fair, should fall on Simmons himself.
I think there was so much roster churn around Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid because they are such a tough fit on the court. Yes, I understand the team has mostly been successful with both of them on the floor, but that's because they're two good players. Joel Embiid is excellent. Ben Simmons is very good. You put two good players on the court, it's going to probably be good. I think in general, especially in the biggest moments, especially in the playoffs, especially late in games when defense is tightened, the 76ers haven't been as good as you'd hope with two players as good as Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. And that's why the 76ers have spent so much time trying to find the right fit. I thought they did a pretty good job last year really emphasizing shooting. I understood the idea to go with more defense, getting Al Horford, Josh Richardson. I don't think it was as sound as the shooting that they got around those two. But even with Tobias Harris at power forward, even with Seth Curry, even with Danny Green, that wasn't enough in the end to cover for the shooting deficiencies of Ben Simmons. I just think it's a real tough fit with Embiid. And so to me, this pairing never made sense because Ben Simmons is such a good player. He had so much value. I think he still has a lot of value. I don't think it's at his peak anymore. I think his value has dropped. And so to me, I wonder, why didn't the 76ers do a better job of seeing this problem coming? To me, I would have been looking to trade Ben Simmons for years. Maybe there was no trade out there, right? I definitely didn't want to dump him. I didn't want to trade him for whatever you could get. But where it seemed like his value used to be before he was exposed in last year's playoffs, seems like the 76ers could have gotten a lot for him and been in a better position now. I understand the idea of like, oh, he's, you know, these are the stars they want to build around. But why did it have to be that way? Why was the team so set on building around these two when, to me, it was clear this was not it was a good fit because they're good players. And so you put good players on the court, good things are going to happen. But to me, it was not nearly an optimal fit.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But I think it was not especially difficult to talk yourself into this being a duo that could win the Eastern Conference. I mean, even if you just look at last season, they earned the conference's top seed, albeit they got some help with Brooklyn having a ton of injuries and it being a rather odd, you know, pandemic affected season, but they were the top seed in the East. They did have a tremendous starting five. And look, if Ben Simmons shoots 50 or 60% in that Hawks series, as opposed to 33%, a pretty good chance they win the series. And it was mystifying even to him why he dropped off to that extent. I think if Doc Rivers coaches a better series and isn't stubborn about using these all bench or mostly bench lineups, the Sixers are probably in a better position to win the series. If Dwight Howard isn't, you know, playing pretty poor basketball in three or four games in that series, again, the Sixers probably are moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals. So, I think in hindsight, absolutely not an optimal pairing, but a very, very good one. And even if you go back to 2018-19, you know, they're a miraculous quadruple bouncing shot away from the conference finals on that team with Butler as the third star with Simmons and Embiid. So I think the margins tend to be very small in the NBA. You can even look at Kevin Durant's, you know, toe being a little bit too big for the Nets to be an Eastern Conference Finals team this season. Now they're in a very, very difficult position because they didn't pull the trigger. I think it's clearly something that's been, you know, under consideration for a while. We heard a lot of buzz about Simmons as a potential centerpiece to a James Harden deal. But now the idea of Simmons as a viable, you know, central piece in a trade for a star, unfortunately, from the Sixers' perspective, it looks much less likely because they've had a lot of faith in this duo for quite a few years here now.
Yeah, it's fair that Ben Simmons wasn't the only problem in the playoffs last year, but the way he was playing by the end definitely was a problem and an addressable one. And, you know, the 76ers are going about trying to address the other ones too. Let's talk more about a Simmons trade. And I think this is my starting point. What do you think about the idea of trading Simmons for a significantly lesser player in a vacuum, but someone who fits better? And you can imagine whoever you want here, and this wouldn't be the whole package, but this would be the centerpiece of a package. I think CJ McCollum is the classic example. Malcolm Brogdon might fit that also. Maybe a D'Angelo Russell. Imagine whoever you want there with, you know, Smat, maybe a role player, moderate picks, whatever. Clear talent downgrade, probably getting older. But I'd say getting someone who fits much better with Joel Embiid. And I don't know whether that's worth it, right? You lower your ceiling to a degree, but I also think Joel Embiid is an awesome player. He is ready to lead a championship team. And so if you have the right fitting pieces around him, then maybe the 76ers win a title next year. And if the 76ers win a title because of this trade, of course you're like, ah, who cares about getting older or having an overall talent downgrade? The goal is a title, and I think that's within reach. Is it likely? No. The odds are against almost any single team winning a title. It's so rare that a team is favored over the field to win a title. But I think the 76ers are in that mix. I think trading, making that type of trade, might increase their short-term title odds and lower their long-term title odds. What do you think of that? Am I looking at this the right way? And what do you think of that kind of trade-off?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable way to look at it. I think probably since the moment Game 7 ended, you figured Daryl Morey would be in a situation where he'd be weighing the type of offers you just laid out, and then the possibility, even if it's not super probable, of a star such as Damian Lillard shaking free and Ben Simmons being attractive to the team that has that star. And I think, you know, that's looking a bit more remote right now, just given where things stand, but it's not impossible. I think one way the Sixers could still leave some of those star potential trades on the table is by getting a lot of draft assets in a Ben Simmons deal. So if you get back, you know, several first round picks in addition to a couple of helpful players, then maybe that leaves you down the line in a position where if Damian Lillard's unhappy in 2 years, you know, the Sixers are theoretically a team that could make, you know, the best offer there. But yeah, no, I think overall you're looking at it in a reasonable way. I think CJ McCollum makes sense on paper as a player who obviously can knock down threes at a high rate, isn't shy about shooting them, doesn't turn the ball over a lot, which has creeped up as a playoff problem for the Sixers, and also can handle backup point guard minutes as well, which might be nice in a situation where Tyrese Maxey is still on this team, but at just 20 years old, maybe isn't capable of handling the ball for, you know, 35, 40 minutes a game. So yeah, a lot of factors for Daryl Morey to weigh. And I think the idea of not winning a trade, but getting a player who fits well with Embiid is certainly one he should be considering. Yeah.
Do you think Daryl Morey looks at it that way? What do you think his tolerance is for not winning a trade, when you're just evaluating it in a vacuum where the asset play isn't necessarily in Philadelphia's favor?
Yeah, my sense is it's his tolerance for that would not be very high, and it would be far from his preferred option. I think the preferred option for an executive like Morey is always to hunt for the star and not to do a trade just because there's public pressure or pressure from the player or pressure from the player's agent or camp. Really to win the trade, if that is at all doable. And I think he probably more than most executives holds out hope for a long time that, quote unquote, winning a Simmons trade is doable. So I would not be surprised at all if this gets messier, if this gets a lot more uncomfortable, if this lingers for a lot longer in Morey hoping that he can put himself in a better position with these negotiations and be persuasive to teams that just because Ben Simmons isn't happy with the idea of staying with the Sixers and just because he had a bad playoff series, that he's not, you know, still an extremely valuable player and still a young player who could theoretically be tremendously enticing for a team should he make this long-awaited expansion with his offensive game. So My sense is that, yeah, Morey would strongly prefer not to quote-unquote lose a trade. And, you know, we'll see if that's actually doable here in what has become a very tricky situation for him.
Whenever people ask me, you know, should a team trade a player, I almost always give the same answer of, well, it depends on the offers, and I don't know all the offers, and I don't know anything specific here, but just generally knowing how things work, I tend to believe that of all of the reported offers made by Philadelphia and all the reported offers made to Philadelphia, we don't know what the best offer Philadelphia is sitting on, right? The Timberwolves trading for Simmons without giving up Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony Edwards, or D'Angelo Russell. So giving up, you know, I guess Malik Beasley, some filler, some picks, like that kind of junk. Like, I don't think that's Philadelphia's best offer, nor do I think, you know, these wild Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam and picks and this, and I think OG Anunoby was in there. Like, you know, all these offers the 76ers are making, searching for a ton. I don't think that's the most reasonable offer the 76ers have made. I think it's somewhere in between on both. So roughly, maybe having some idea, roughly, and I think it's going to matter in the roughly, but roughly what the 76ers could get for Simmons, what do you think? Do you think it's worth making the move now or starting training camp with him still on the roster and, you know, maybe calling his bluff on a holdout, or maybe he does hold out and it turns into a bigger mess. Maybe he shows up and it's an even bigger mess. I don't know if I'd rather have him sitting at home or joining the team and causing chaos or what would be preferable, but neither is pleasant. You make a trade now, it's at least going to become pleasant. Is it going to be worthwhile in the long run? I don't know. That's what I'm asking you, just in a rough sense of what you think the 76ers could get for Ben Simmons now. What do you think would be a better route, trading him before training camp or taking this into the season?
Yeah, like you say, it's hard to assess. I'd lean toward waiting not being a bad option here. I think, as you say, it would be awkward and it would be difficult and unfortunate for people in Joel Embiid's position and Doc Rivers' position for every day to be, you know, what's going on with Simmons, or is he going to report, or, you know, is he at all considering reporting, etc. But the bottom line is a Ben Simmons trade, the ultimate goal would be making the Sixers a team with a better chance of winning in the playoffs, right? Like, I think everyone acknowledges he's a very productive regular season player and his flaws have been especially glaring in the playoffs. So worst case scenario of he holds out and the Sixers refuse to trade him because the offers still aren't to their liking. You're still talking about a very good team led by Joel Embiid, likely a team where Tyrese Maxey and some younger players get heavier minutes. And I think you're still looking at a team that has a decent chance to be cohesive and like each other and kind of stay in the boat while that drama continues to unfold. So tough to judge without knowing what every single team has seriously offered to Daryl Morey. But I think waiting is not an outlandish path here. I think Simmons' camp making it known that they're displeased, it's not ideal, but it's also not disastrous for the Sixers at this stage. If there's a situation, as you kind of allude to, that's Jimmy Butler-esque or James Harden-esque, where Simmons is at practice and is throwing basketballs at teammates or doing these ridiculously disruptive things, then I think that's a different story. But I think right now, you know, there's still a few weeks until camp, and there's still more time to let things play out. And Daryl Morey would hope let things play out in a way that favors the Sixers. So that's kind of where I would stand on that particular question.
I'm glad you brought up James Harden. I think it's so absurd that supposedly the 76ers are asking for a James Harden-esque package for Simmons when the 76ers just offered Simmons plus a lot more for Harden, and that wasn't good enough. And then Simmons had the playoffs he did. For if Philly's asking with a straight face for that type of package, I mean, good luck to him. And I also understand why Simmons and his agent Rich Paul might resent, like, hey, you know, we're with you. You want to trade him? We want him traded. We're all on the same page. Why are you doing this? Why are you taking so long? You've known all offseason that this was coming, that, you know, we all want him gone. Just pick an offer. Pick the best one and just do it. It's not going to get way better. I can understand that resentment. It seemed almost inevitable that we'd end up at this point if the 76ers didn't make a trade. Maybe that speaks to your point about Daryl Morey's comfort seeking this best offer, that he's not going to be bothered by the chaos. Because, you know, I think, one, that's somewhat how Morey operates. Two, executives are not in the fray in the same way coaches are, players are. Doc Rivers is a prominent coach with a prominent voice. Joel Embiid obviously holds a lot of sway within this organization. How much do you think they can pressure and direct if they want? I don't even know what they'd want to do, but if they say, hey, we're the ones who have to be around Ben Simmons if he shows up, this is awkward and uncomfortable for us. You know, we want a new player in here. Coaches, players, they tend to think more short term. How do you think the decision making within the franchise goes? Is this completely Daryl Morey's decision of when to do it? Do Embiid and Rivers, maybe through ownership, have a voice? How does that shake out?
I think Joel Embiid is massively influential here. Daryl Morey speaks with him almost with a tone of reverence. He has a extremely high level of respect for Joel Embiid, both as a player, as a person. They get along well off the court. They certainly speak often about the team they want to build. It was interesting, even heading into last season, Joel Embiid mentioned that he had a discussion with the front office about his desire to have more shooting around him, and that seemingly played a role in the additions of Seth Curry and Danny Green. So I think if Joel Embiid makes it known that he is hugely dissatisfied with the state of affairs on the Sixers, that will play a role. I don't think it's the end-all be-all. I think Morey ultimately has final say regardless, and there's a clear hierarchy in the front office in a way that perhaps there wasn't under past regimes that were nominally led by Elton Brand. But I think Joel Embiid is very important here. And Doc Rivers is key too. Daryl Morey certainly has a lot of respect for him. They, you know, originally formed a relationship in Boston. They get along well. They talk a lot about their vision for the team. And I think Doc Rivers, if he lets Daryl Morey know a few days into training camp that this is just not going to work out and we urgently need to change how we're playing the situation, I think that would be a significant voice as well. But I think everything is in Daryl Morey's court for the most part, not to say that those other perspectives are unimportant, but Daryl Morey has a lot of power on the Sixers, and they trust him to be the guy making these calls.
What was Doc Rivers doing after Game 7 against the Hawks? I mean, we've seen that quote where he was asked, you know, can Ben Simmons be the point guard in a championship team? And Doc Rivers said, I don't know. We've seen that quote come up kind of as a reason Ben Simmons wants out. And I'm sure Ben Simmons didn't like it. I'm skeptical that was the reason. I think that might be getting overplayed a little bit. Like we've been talking about, I think the reason is that he and Embiid just aren't an optimal fit, and Embiid's ready to win a title, and so it goes a different direction. But I saw, you know, Doc Rivers throughout all of last season really going out of his way to pump up Ben Simmons, talk about how he and Embiid fit well together. Pick it, Ben Simmons for Defensive Player of the Year, even when Joel Embiid was campaigning for that award. I think at one point during the playoffs, he said, shame on you to any Philly fans who didn't really appreciate Ben Simmons. I think all of this was necessarily genuine. I think Doc Rivers believed in Ben Simmons, but I also think that he made a point to exaggerate anything positive he'd say about Ben Simmons, because Doc Rivers has been doing this a long time. He endorses his players for awards that they don't necessarily deserve it. It's one of his methods of getting guys to buy in and play better, and it often works. But then all of a sudden, after Game 7, pivot with a different message. Was that just out of frustration? Was that saying, hey, me trying to inflate Ben Simmons' ego, that clearly didn't work, so we need to try something different? Was that deliberate? What do you think happened there with Doc Rivers after Game 7 loss to the Hawks?
I definitely don't think it was a motivational tactic. I think it was a moment where he was responding to a lot of questions with I don't know or some variation of I have no clue what just happened and what went wrong, but it's extremely frustrating, and it's something that I'll need to reevaluate when I'm in a different headspace. In the moment, you know, I personally didn't see it as a huge deal or him being bleak on Ben Simmons's future. It just felt like an honest answer of, I don't really know a lot of things right now, and that is one of them. And I think it would have felt highly disingenuous if he did say that he believed in Ben Simmons as a championship-level point guard after that performance. So for me, it was just an honest moment where he didn't care about being diplomatic the way he had for the majority of the season. But you're absolutely right. Then whenever there was an implication in his mind that someone was saying Ben Simmons's game was fundamentally flawed in some way, he would get very defensive and prickly and you know, borderline combative. And that was a sharp departure from that tone. But for me, it was just an honest answer, which, you know, we always appreciate as reporters. And just given how much scrutiny there was on Simmons and the Sixers after that game, that particular answer got a lot of attention. And yeah, Ben Simmons, you know, you can understand him being made aware of that and not being thrilled about it, even if I think it would be hard to dispute the notion that not being sure in that situation was totally fair, you know.
Yeah, and I think even with more time to reflect, I think, I don't know, is the appropriate answer. I don't know whether Ben Simmons can be the point guard in a championship team. Not the way he plays right now, probably, unless everything is situated just right around him. And I think that's a high burden to build your whole team around Ben Simmons. I'm not sure he's quite good enough to justify that, though maybe he is. He's still young, but he could also grow. I don't think he's necessarily stuck as a player. His shot hasn't been this broken forever. He wasn't somebody shooting a lot of three-pointers, but at least he'd shoot a little from the mid-range or even shoot at the rim. That's something he shied away from, as Joel Embiid pointed out. So that is the best defense of Doc Rivers, is that he was telling the truth. I will stick up for whether it's the nice thing to say or not. I'll stick up for somebody who gives a truthful answer in those press conferences. Those Joel Embiid comments after the game, that seemed way harsher to Ben Simmons to me, because he went, you know, Doc Rivers was asked, you know, do you think Ben Simmons can be a championship point guard? Joel Embiid went out of his way to point out Ben Simmons not dunking was the turning point in the game. And add that to the other comments Joel Embiid has made over the years about how, you know, players need to work outside their comfort zones. That seemed to me to say Ben Simmons needs to shoot more. We just talked about the tweet. There's a lot going on with Simmons and Embiid, too. I think Doc Rivers has the emotional maturity to handle this. I think Joel Embiid, to a certain sense, doesn't care, right? Like, even in his tweets, he said he loves drama. Like, he'll get a lot of attention, and he'll probably just enjoy having the attention. But I just really question the most whether Simmons could handle coming back to the 76ers and dealing with all of that mentally. Do you think if he comes back, or if he faces that choice, if he's not traded, do you think it'd be hardest on him or somebody else?
I'd probably lean toward Simmons himself. I think the collective impact on the team would be quite significant, but it's somewhat a situation where you can almost spread that burden of being asked the questions. You know, there's a limited number of questions that can be asked, and each player who was made available to the media would surely be asked some version of what's going on with Ben Simmons and how do you feel about it. But it's at least not all on a single person, even if Joel Embiid, as you say, is always in the spotlight to a large extent. I think Simmons, especially given that it has been leaked out there that he doesn't plan to return to training camp, if he were to change his mind, I don't think Philadelphia fans would be very forgiving or feel that that is a great turn of events. I think well before Ben Simmons made it known through the media that he does not plan to return, most Sixers fans were on board with the idea of this is a player that we need to part ways with as an organization. So I think that would be very tough on Simmons. And I think in some improbable scenario where he's in a Sixers uniform and he's playing games, the bar for what would satisfy the fan base would be high. He would need to make free throws at a high rate. He would need to take jump shots. He would need to be aggressive attacking the basket. Anything outside of that, he would be booed very, very heavily. That's just the reality.
You know, we've been talking about different points of pressure, and that's one. And I'm curious about fans' reaction, how this might influence the whole organization in terms of, say, whatever else you want about the process. Sam Hinkie did a great job of giving these 76ers so many assets to work with, a great situation to be inherited by a few lead executives now. And these assets have just gotten depreciated. That, you know, I mean, you mentioned Jimmy Butler earlier, right? He came in and out, and, you know, by now that turned into Josh Richardson, which turned into Seth Curry, which is nice, but it's not Jimmy Butler. Trading up for Markelle Fultz was a disaster, using that top pick on him and giving up another first rounder. There's so many examples of where, you know, 76ers had cap space, used it on Al Horford, then had to dump him. Just so many examples of this great situation winnowing down to this. And I know 76ers fans are not a monolith, but how do you think fans would react if, of course, you know, there's some anger towards Simmons, and if this turns into a great package, if it's Damian Lillard or somebody like that, Bradley Beal, everybody is over the moon. But what if it's that type of package we were talking about before, where the centerpiece is somebody like CJ McCollum, and you just say, man, we are in a bad situation, but at least we get somebody who fits better. Like, it's not good from the asset play. How do you think 76ers fans would react to that type of trade?
I think it would be a mixed reaction, but I do think there's a sizable chunk of the fan base who instinctively would just be pleased that, phew, Ben Simmons is no longer on the team, and we have someone who takes jump shots and, you know, is a good jump shooter. I think that would weigh heavily in how a lot of fans did see this. But I think also in that situation, there would be criticism of Daryl Morey for perhaps bungling the situation, you know, getting a little too cute with it in not trading Ben Simmons earlier in this offseason, and at least on the surface, hurting his leverage in these negotiations and having to settle. So I think, as you say, it wouldn't be a monolithic reaction. You know, it would probably be a pretty split fan base. There'd probably be a lot of wait and see, like, okay, let's see how this new guy does fit alongside Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris. If Tyrese Maxey is on the team, I think there'd be a lot of excitement about him getting heavier minutes and stepping into a bigger role. I think it would be a varied reaction. I think with CJ McCollum in particular, the fact that he's a Lehigh product would probably work a little bit in his favor. And he's seems to be a likable, charismatic guy. So that would probably help a little bit in his early days here. Just in terms of him, you know, getting along well with reporters and things of that nature. But if it's not CJ McCollum, then I think a lot of fans would be really curious just how that new piece would fit in on this team. And I think there'd be a lot of folks open to the possibility that this new player would be a lot more, quote unquote, built for Philly than Ben Simmons is.
What an indictment of Ben Simmons, not built for Philly. I think there have been attention paid over time to, is Ben Simmons a point guard? Is that his best position? Should he be a point guard? And a lot of these times, there was another player on the roster where if you wanted to reconfigure things, trade a front court player and move Ben Simmons to power forward, you could just slot in, or think you could slot in at least, Markel Fultz, Jimmy Butler, George Hill as the lead ball handler from the perimeter. It's a little different now. I think sometimes it gets overlooked. If the best Ben Simmons trade package involves bringing back a wing or a couple wings and not getting another point guard or point guard type, what do you think of Philadelphia going into the season with Embiid, a bolstered wing rotation, but at point guard, you know, maybe it's Seth Curry kind of playing somewhat out of position. Maybe it's Tyrese Maxey in a bigger role. Maybe it's Shake Milton getting a little bit of a bigger role, some combination of. What would you think of just, hey, these are the point guard-ish players on the roster now, and those are our Philly's point guards?
Yeah, I don't think that is a disastrous way to at least enter the season. I think, you know, there's always the possibility of in-season upgrades, and Daryl Morey would, I assume, be exploring those in that situation. But look, this team does think very, very highly of Tyrese Maxey. He only played two games in Summer League, but was awfully impressive there, and has clearly made it a point of emphasis this offseason to work on some of his point guard skills as far as running an offense. He actually said that's something that Doc Rivers told him to do, you know, distributing to his teammates, shooting pull-up threes more regularly. And I think even though he's 20 years old, he's shown he has a knack for big moments and was impressive in large part in the postseason, you know, as a rookie. So I think the Sixers wouldn't feel too anxious about that situation, you know, just in terms of not checking off the positional label of point guard. But that said, I think that they would probably like a veteran point guard such as George Hill, who's no longer on the team, but, you know, someone in that mold who could at least share some of the ball handling burden and ensure, you know, Maxey didn't have it all on his shoulders in that situation.
What have I not asked you about the Ben Simmons situation that we should cover?
No, I think we've covered most of it. There's obviously a lot of frustration and angst among the fan base, as we touched on. I think, you know, it is interesting, at least, you know, we're talking about how Daryl Morey tends to play things that he avoided any moves that severely limited the Sixers' options moving forward. And I think that is to his credit. He tried to make marginal upgrades this offseason, adding George Niang as a guy who could be an upgrade at that backup four spot, adding Andre Drummond as a player that the Sixers seemingly believe is better overall than Dwight Howard as a backup to Joel Embiid. But Tyrese Maxey is still on this team, Matisse Thybulle, you know, they've got some draft picks that they could, give away if necessary. So a lot of pieces are still in place if Morey can somehow pull something off either in the near or not so near future to land a star. And I think he does deserve a little credit for how he has played that situation. But in my mind, he's ultimately going to be judged most on how is this Simmons thing ultimately resolved. And I think it's probably a little too early to pass definitive judgment until we have an answer to that question. So until we do, we all wait to see exactly what's going to go down.
Frustration and angst are good words to describe the situation, but I don't know if they are the appropriate words. They definitely describe how people feel, but I think people are sleeping on the 76ers. I saw 2 years ago so many people write them off after losing the first round when Ben Simmons was sidelined, and that was back when Ben Simmons was still a helpful playoff player, at least in the first round. Everybody's panicking now after a second round loss when Joel Embiid was playing hurt. If he were capable of sustaining his normal play for just a few more minutes against the Hawks, the 76ers might have been in the conference finals and, yeah, probably would have lost the Bucks. We feel better going to the conference finals than losing the second round. This team had the best record in the East last season. Now everybody's talking about the Nets, I think understandably. Everybody's talking about the Bucks, understandably. I think people are talking about the Heat somewhat understandably. I think people are talking about the Hawks mostly understandably. But I think Philly belongs in that discussion. Even if Ben Simmons is not back, he's going to return something. This team, he's an asset at minimum who will get the team better players that can help. I think this is still a championship contender. I feel worse about them than I did last year, but I still think this is a team with a plausible chance to win a championship. And people are dwelling on the negatives, and hey, maybe we just fueled that with our 45 or so minute conversation on what went wrong with the Ben Simmons situation and how the 76ers get out of it. But am I wrong for thinking this is still a team in really good shape relative to the rest of the league?
No, I don't think you are. No, I think those are all good points that I would agree with. I think Joel Embiid has ascended into, you know, one of the best players in basketball, and it's a really big deal that he took that leap and that the Sixers now have him locked down until he's 33 years old, you know, having signed him to the Supermax extension this offseason. I think Tobias Harris became a lot better as in kind of well-rounded player last season, improved defensively, improved as a passer, and was a very good fourth quarter clutch scorer for the Sixers, at least in regular season situations, albeit was disappointing in games 5 and 7 against the Hawks. But that doesn't discount the fact that he's still in his prime, borderline all-star sort of player, which, you know, I think probably is something that tends to be overlooked for people kind of taking a broad look at the Eastern Conference. And Matisse Thybul was a member of an all-defensive team in his second year, despite only playing 20 minutes per game, just because he has these absurd talents as a defender with these tremendous instincts, this, you know, incredible closing speed, and just this knack for forcing turnovers and sparking transition offense. We've talked about Tyrese Maxey, who looks like a steal with, you know, a pick in the early 20s. And then the Sixers also like the two other picks in that draft, Paul Reed and Isaiah Joe, second rounders that they seem to think have a shot at contributing this upcoming season. So still a very good basketball team. It's just the Sixers are in this situation where fans are sick of being told that they're close or that, you know, patience is required. And I can understand that, but I agree. It's not all doom and gloom. There are a lot of positives with this team, regardless of how the Simmons situation is resolved. And just having Joel Embiid, as long as that's the case, and as long as he's healthy, this team has a shot to do very, very well. Because you do also have to account for the fact that he was injured in the playoffs. And you saw a couple of games in that Hawks series, I think most notably game 4, where he was 0 for 12 in the second half. Like, he was clearly hampered physically. So you imagine a situation where he's at 100% and in peak health. And I think that makes the Sixers just inherently a formidable Eastern Conference team.
Follow Noah on Twitter at Noah Levick, L-E-V-I-C-K. Read his work at NBC Sports Philadelphia, because this Ben Simmons situation is, of course, fascinating. There's a lot going on there. But this is a team to watch going forward. So pay attention to Noah's coverage, not just now during this Ben Simmons saga, but into the season, into the following years. The 76ers are here to stay as a team in the national consciousness. Noah, thanks for coming on and discussing Philadelphia's situation with me.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.